Hey, it's James from Marketing for Restaurants here, and welcome to episode 122 of Secret Sauce, the Restaurant Marketing Podcast, a model for restaurant innovation and creativity.
Some restaurants are quiet, lose money, and the owner works 70 hours a week. Other restaurants are busy, profitable, and the owners work a few hours a day. What's the difference? They have a secret sauce. Join James from Marketing for Restaurants as he helps you come up with your recipe for restaurant success. Your secret sauce.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. Before we get into today's hot topic, restaurant innovation and creativity, this is something that we've talked about in the past, but we're going to dig a little bit deeper into it, and we're going to come up with a bit more of a methodology that I think is going to be able to really help you in the way that you sort of approach innovation and creativity. And then, you know, we're going to bring it right at the end. We're going to talk about why restaurant innovation and creativity is so important. Before we get there, though, I want to talk about something that happened on the weekend. So Saturday is generally the day I do podcasts. I'm doing one on Monday today. But generally, I work on a Saturday, and I had quite a bit of research to do for a podcast episode. So I was going to be late. And so got home moderately late. And so we did something really quite unusual. So we very rarely get takeaway on a Saturday night. That's a night either I'll cook something, Tina will cook something, or we'll go out for dinner. We were originally planning on going out for dinner, but it was just too late and it was too cold. So lazy us decided that we would stay at home. All well and good so far. As I'm driving home, I said to Tina, you know, I need to work something out. And so the decision was kind of made that we would have fish and chips. Now, we've got a local fish and chip shop. They're okay. Not the best fish and chips in the world, but, you know, they're kind of all right because fish and chips does tend to be a bit of a local product. Now, the interesting thing is, I said, it is late. You'll need to work out what time they are open till. And Tina, so she jumped online. They don't really have a website. So Google's trying to infer all sorts of information about when they're open, things like that. Generally, it sort of gets it from Facebook, but it doesn't like referring to people's Facebook pages because they're competing companies for advertising revenue. So that can make it a little bit interesting. And lo and behold, what pops up? Menulog. She goes, wow, they're on Menulog and they deliver. And I'm like, well, don't do that because it'll obviously be hideously more expensive because if Menulog's taking 30% or 35%, then they're going to just be marking up the price. And she said, let me have a look. And no, not marked up at all. The same price. She went through the menu on Menulog and there was a $5 delivery fee. So what they've done is they've taken their menu, they've put it on Menulog. They're getting charged for the fee, the delivery fee from Menulog, their commission. So that, and that, I'm not sure what Menulog are charging. I think they're a little bit more open to negotiation than the others, at least 30%. Now, the interesting thing is the $5 delivery fee, our order was around $50, I want to say, by the time, you know, family of four, a few hungry hippos in there. So it was around $50 plus the $5 delivery fee. Now, $50 is good because it kind of makes the mathematics work out quite nicely. So their commission is going to be around $15. So the restaurant will pay Menulog $15 for that order. Bear in mind, not a new customer. So Menulog actually hasn't done anything to get this order. All they've done is sort of interpose themselves in between the customer. But that's all right. We'll continue on. The issue that I have with this is that we have, let's just say that their profit margin on their business is 10%. Okay, now that's probably significantly higher than most restaurants and takeaways in Australia and, you know, generally across the world. They're not an incredibly high margin business. If it's 10%, they were in the running to make $5, 10% of $50. What's happened, though, is that out of the $50, they're going to lose $15. Now, they make up some of that with a $5 delivery fee. That brings their loss down to $10. That's actually twice what it is that they would have made on the deal. So they are now behind the ball on that order. And the thing that's really, really sad is that $15 has gone out the window because they now do delivery. this is something that we did not want. This was on a Saturday night, which I've got to tell you, they're usually pretty damn busy. There's usually a bit of a wait. This is probably something that they didn't need to do. What they should have done, if they were going to go with delivery and if they were going to get MenuLog to do it, I think probably the best thing that they could have done is increase their prices. Now, my attitude was, don't order from them if they're using MenuLog because the prices are going to be marked up massively. They didn't mark the prices up. They just left them as is. So we just took the $5 hit. I think everyone needs to be thinking a little bit more carefully. If you haven't listened to our episode on Domino's Pizza, you need to be having a listen to that. If it was going to be an extra $20, we would have got off our lazy asses and gone and picked the fish and chips up ourselves. They are literally 5 minutes down the road. But no, we saw the opportunity and we took it. It was only $5. $5 makes it a no-brainer. $20 makes it a bit more interesting. And if it was $20, then the restaurant could have still been profitable rather than losing money on that sale, which is really quite sad. You don't want to be losing money on any sales. Now, let's get on to the model for restaurant creativity and innovation. Now, first things first, what is creativity and what is innovation? They are very good questions. I am glad you asked. So, creativity is the use of imagination or original ideas to create something. So, inventiveness, it's a little bit more subjective. Innovation is the process of creating a new method, idea, or product. It is a little bit more objective. Innovation can be seen as executing new ideas to create value. Innovation is the commercialization of creativity. Why have I bundled creativity and innovation together? Because I think it's really important that you look at both sides, effectively both sides of the coin. Innovation is the process of actually making it happen. Now, I've spoken to a lot of people and they talk about all sorts of crazy ideas that they've got and they are very creative. The problem is that they don't actually do anything with those ideas. I've also seen people who spend a lot of time innovating, but they're innovating really around the peripheries. They're just making minor incremental changes in business processes or the products that they've got, when realistically they would be a lot better off going for that big moonshot, creating something really, really amazing. They don't have the creativity to be able to drive that process of innovation to be able to create something that is completely epic. You want to kind of link those two together, the innovation and the creativity. You've got to be able to come up with the ideas, and then that idea really becomes that problem statement of how would I turn that into a real product? In the restaurant, how would I turn that into a menu idea? How would I turn that into something that could change the experience for our customers? So creativity gives you the idea, then you're going to use an innovation process to be able to drive that to the point where it's something that you can put in front of customers and they go, wow, this is really cool. This is why I love this restaurant. That's why innovation and creativity is really important. As we start off on our journey around creativity and innovation, I think there's five important questions that you should always be thinking about, because these can be little triggers that can help you come up with ideas and can help you come up with ways to bring your ideas to fruition. And they are really quite simple. Who, what, when, where, and why? If you use those questions to question everything that it is that you do, you'll get not only a better understanding of why it is that you're doing it, but where you can start to play with your business plan, your marketing plan, the products that you've got. A really good example of that is, you know, back probably in the 50s, maybe a little bit earlier, there was a pizza restaurant in the United States that said, who is it that we cook pizzas for? And generally people say, you know, it's people who within a radius who come into our restaurant. And this restaurant owner thought, well, what about if we cooked for people who didn't want to come into our restaurant? That was the birth of restaurant delivery. Interesting. And that's just by asking that question, who, and then, you know, expanding out that. So a really critical product innovation, obviously copied quite well, and has occurred billions of times since then. So an innovation that was probably well worth doing. Now, what we've done is we've broken the model into three areas. So the first one is what we call the ingredients. Second one is technique. And the third one is process. So ingredients are, what I like to do is I like to cheat a little bit every now and then. The cheating here is that I'm taking, this is not your recipe ingredients. It definitely includes recipe ingredients, but we go a little bit wider than that. It could be the ingredients in the experience that you provide. It could be the ingredients of the way that you serve your food up. So what are the inputs that you've got there? And some really good examples are, if we just start looking at, we can go back to your actual food ingredients. And one of the things I like to look at is combining, substituting, addition, and subtraction. So combining, great example of that, the Teleball milkshake. Aki Dacos from Food Craft Espresso and Bakery in Sydney, they were sitting there wondering one day what would happen if we combined a milkshake. We make a really good chocolate milkshake with a Teleball. So a Teleball is a round donut which is filled with Nutella. Completely went mental. Pretty easy combining, not overly complicated. The butter chicken dumpling, that's another example of food combining, taking a couple of either a couple of ingredients or a couple of actual products and combining them together. Smash them together and see what you get. The next one on that is substitution. So take a component of a dish and substitute it with something else. Can't think of anything better than the ramen burger. Get rid of the buns and replace it with some fried ramen. Take an existing menu item and add something to it. You know, a great example that we see lots of times is people adding hot sauce. They'll add their favorite super fiery habanero or spirit naga chili sauce, and they'll call it super hot, and it'll become this location's hottest burger or whatever it is. And from there, you know, you've got a challenge meal. In Australia, you know, we do all sorts of interesting things with pizza. We've added pineapple to pizza. We've added egg to pizza, you know, something that's a little bit unusual and then becomes, you know, quite the crowd favorite. Subtraction. Subtraction's another interesting thing that you can do. And a great example of this, and this has always amazed me, a Subway, you can get a Subway roll without the roll. So it's actually cheaper to make and it's actually more expensive to buy. So a very high margin product. Why is that? Because they've worked out what the product is that they're selling. They are selling a Subway burger, the food of Subway, the actual ingredients, not the actual roll, because that person who is purchasing it is either making a lifestyle choice or probably more likely a choice around gluten because they may have celiac disease. Because of the fact that it is then, you know, more important to them to get it without the bun, that's why they charge a premium for it. They understand what the product is that they're selling and they're pricing that accordingly. So that's ingredients. You can move further out from your traditional food ingredients though. So a couple of examples would be Alinea in Chicago, a great restaurant, very, very big on innovation and creativity. If you look at the plates that they serve the dishes on or not, there's some very interesting things. And so first time I was there, when I took Tina, they were serving on some glass and underneath that was some bark. So it was a part of a tree. And that was to make you start thinking about nature and the environment, and there was something on top of that. Another dish, they actually came in and built the dish on. The dish was actually a piece of concrete, and so they graffitied it and did all sorts of interesting things. It was a carrot puree, I think they were spraying it from an aerosol can. Interesting things like that. Of course, the piece de resistance when it comes to that kind of innovation is the fact that they did their dessert on a latex table mat. So they actually did it on the table, and they put all sorts of beautiful dessert pieces on there. That presentation is a fundamental part of that menu dish because of the fact that if it was presented in any other way, it just wouldn't be what it was at Alinea the way that they presented it. A very cool way of presenting your food. And it also made it a lot more experiential because it was built in front of you. This isn't something that they had hidden away in the kitchen. They'd actually brought it out in front of you in a way that you were, wow, I wasn't expecting that. Like, there's no plate here. These people have just gone berserk and they're putting it on the tablecloth. That's cool. Now, the next thing that you're going to be wanting to think about is the techniques that you use. And these are pretty important because they actually set the left and right of arc of what it is that you can do. What is the skill that you have in your kitchen? And this is, I think, one of those things that's really interesting because it might actually drive you to look at the skill set that you've got in the kitchen, look at the kind of people that you're employing, because if they were more skilled, you could potentially do more with it? I think this is a really important space to be thinking about, because there are some people who get by with the bare minimum level of technical skills in the kitchen, and that's fine as long as that's part of their business plan. There are other places who have incredibly skilled people in the kitchen, not a lot of innovation and creativity. And so I personally think that a lot of that technical capability within the kitchen is completely wasted. If you've got people who've got some pretty mad skills in the kitchen, you want to be challenging them to produce the kind of dishes that is going to reflect their skill sets. So a couple of examples, and we'll start at Alinea once again. So the clear pumpkin pie. So they created a pie, and the actual, when it's brought out to you, they've made a clear pie filling. So they've taken the flavor of the pumpkin and put that into some sort of gel, some sort of, I don't know, this is the thing. They've got the technical capability to be able to do that. But it comes out kind of like a clear jelly, which, you know, hey, that's pretty cool. And once again, it goes into that sensory kind of thing, because it's clear. Therefore, my eyes are telling me no taste. I have no reference to go with this. I think it's probably just going to look like, it's going to taste like nothing, because there's no color there. I can't see any texture or anything. But then you bite into it and then you go, wow, it's pumpkin. Where did that come from? And of course, the other one that I like to talk about is the taffy balloon. A beautiful piece of technical work, and they spent a lot of time in the kitchen developing the process to create this balloon. The balloon, of course, filled with helium, gets bored out. And this, you know, once again, you think about the psychological impact that you want to have with the food that you're creating. Kids love balloons. Adults love balloons because it takes them back to when they were a kid. And then it's something that you eat, and on top of that, it's got the helium in there, so it does the crazy voice thing. How much of a kid are you now? You're just a kid with a really good expenses account or the ability to pay for a significant meal there. But, you know, nothing introduces fun into a menu item like bringing a balloon in. They've brought in an edible balloon, an incredible piece of innovation and creativity. The creation bit? Wow, let's make an edible balloon. Yep, good one. Now you've got to make it. How are you going to innovate around that? How are you actually going to bring that crazy idea to the market? And that, like, there's a lot of people who probably could have had that, you know, name 10 elements of your childhood that were completely fun. Balloons. Okay, let's make a balloon. Let's make an edible balloon. That would be cool. Technically, not cool. Technically, not easy. That's why it's a restaurant like Alinea that can do that, and 99.99% of other restaurants have got no hope of being able to create that kind of dish. Let's go to the completely other end of the spectrum. I always put the Teleball milkshake in that space. Make an incredibly light donut. Everyone should be able to do that. Put a fun filling in it. Yep. We've got Nutella. Okay, so that's good. That's your existing menu item. Make a chocolate milkshake. You know, theirs is actually, it's super thick. It's a really nice milkshake. So they do great milkshakes, and, you know, they do great Teleballs, and they sell lots of both of those. But to really crush it at an Olympic level, combine those two together. These are existing menu items that you have within your restaurant or cafe or bakery, whatever it is. Not too hard to do that. I went to the Great Australian Bakehouse in Pakenham on the weekend. Now, they have got something like 23 different kinds of pies. 23 different kinds of pies. Does that give you a reason to come back? Well, I bought some for the family. Certainly did not 23 of them, though. So maybe, potentially, I've got to go back there. Who is it that you're making these for? A pie? Typically, in Australia, it's a meat pie. Typically, they had vegetarian pies. Who is it that you're making it for? This stuff is really quite easy to do when you start putting that framework in place and making it so that you would be able to start asking these interesting questions. Now, one question that I don't know, do they have a gluten-free pie? That would be interesting. Didn't see that advertised there. Potentially they do, because then the product that you're selling is the ability for someone to have a pie who may not have had a pie since they were diagnosed with celiac disease. What would that be worth? More than your average pie, I'm thinking. But lots of great flavors, lots of great pies. So you look at the technical capability within your business. Now, they're a bakery, so they should be able to make pies. How many bakeries are out there that don't really do too much effort? They might have one or two different types, nothing super exotic, nothing to write home about, nothing that's super Instagrammable, not a lot of innovation going on. And once again, I always say this, restaurants were designed for creativity. That's what your specials board's for. So let's think just off the top of our heads, what kind of pies you could do. And so I literally just stopped there for 60 seconds. So dessert pies, you know, like in Australia. And so what I started doing is I like to add events in there. So you can do, you know, time limited event related ones. So in Australia, we celebrate Australia Day. A typical Australian dish would be a pavlova. What would a pavlova look like if it was a pie? That could be interesting because everyone loves the crunchiness of the pie base. I would be interested to see what that would sort of pan out like. The other thing that would be interesting is, of course, in Australia, we eat the animals that are on our coat of arms. I don't know. It's an Australian thing. So a kangaroo pie, an emu pie, probably a little bit difficult to get. You can also get crocodile meat. I've had crocodile before. That's actually quite nice. So there's three things that I think that would be really interesting to try straight up, all within the technical capability of a bakery. You should be able to make a meat sauce out of kangaroo, should be able to do it for emu, should be able to do it for croc. Yeah, there might be a little bit of innovation around there, you know, a little bit of testing and adjusting to try and get the right recipe, try and get the right flavors, but that's part of the innovation process. Then when Australia Day comes around, celebrate Australia Day with our kangaroo pie. How are you going to present it? You know, is there an edible flag you can put on top of it? Are you going to make a little kangaroo out of pastry? Who knows? That's up for you to decide, but plenty of ideas about the kind of things that you could do there that are well and truly within the skill set of what it is that you've got in your restaurant. Let's take it down a notch and crank it up a bit at the same time. What about if you're in a franchise? So there you've got people with less training, but you've probably got a little bit more technical capability to come up with menu ideas. So Red Robin did the ramen burger a couple of years ago. It's a fascinating story. Drove heaps of people. A really, really, really successful marketing campaign. The really interesting thing about it was they didn't sell too many ramen burgers. What it did was it gave them a reason to speak to people. Come and check out the ramen burger, which is an important role on your menu. You've got to have something that people want to speak about. It drove people to come back into the restaurant. When they got a menu in their hand, they kind of looked at the ramen burger and thought, you know what, I'm just going to get a normal burger anyway. Quite a successful marketing campaign for Red Robin with the technical capability to be able to do that. So obviously they fry stuff up. They had that capability, probably a little bit of innovation as around equipment, but they'll have a kitchen there to be able to do that. But they were able to put that menu item in the hands, or those ingredients in the hands of fairly unskilled work, which, you know, that's actually pretty cool because it needs to be like that because it's being done in thousands of restaurants. Sweet. Now, the last of the trios of ways that you can think about the creativity and innovation process is process. So what is it that you actually do in your restaurant? The way I like to think of it, you've got your ingredients, you've got your technique, and you've got your process. They are three parts of a triangle, but I think that there's another way of looking at it. Process is the most innovation-driven component of the three. Ingredients, much, much, much more creativity. Because you're chopping and changing, you're doing all sorts of things, you're experimenting, you're coming up with all sorts of different ideas about what you're actually going to create. Technique kind of is in the middle. You know, you can do things, and I know that we've spoken to people where we've done process innovation, and they'll say, you know, on a Friday night or a Saturday night, we absolutely get smashed. And, you know, we're thinking of taking this menu item off. We know it's really popular, but it takes too long to produce. And it's like, well, what about if you change the number of burners that you've got so that you can produce more of them? Or how can we look at the menu? How can we look at the way that we do it? Is there more that can be done in prep? Or, you know, are we going to be trying to come up with, can we do it hotter so that we can make it quicker? What is the innovation that we can do around that? And the technique can also be a very creative part of the process as well. The way I like to look at this and the way that we do process innovation here is that we look at what it is that we do in our company. And, you know, I try and keep it down to less than 10 things. I don't want to do more than 10 things, you know, because they're the 10 things that you've got to be fundamentally really, really, really good at. And you know what? I don't think it's possible to be good at really, really good at 10 things. So I'm always like, what is it that we do? What are the key things? What does that process look like? And then how can we innovate on that to make that process better? What does that look like in a restaurant? Well, let's have a look at Ferg Burger. So the burger that I think is the best in the world, the Ferg Burger, it sort of sits there as the one of those must-do things if you go to Queenstown in New Zealand, which is cool. Now, the big thing is that if you're crazy enough to go and want a Ferg Burger for lunch, then you are going to be standing in a queue for, I don't know, 90 minutes, maybe 2 hours. Now, that's great. Everyone would, and there's a lot of restaurant owners who I think would look at that and go, yep, that's it. We're successful. We've got a queue for 2 hours. The guys at Ferg Burger went that one step further. Now, it's a very small place. I don't know if you've been there, but it's very, very small. It's very hard to get a table because the place is always full, even though it's burgers, so they're, you know, they're flipping them around very, very quickly. I don't think people are in sitting down for more than 10 minutes when they eat it. But even though it's in and out, it's very, very small. The interesting thing with it is that they've got their line. They've got waitresses going up and down the line selling beers. That little tiny innovation fundamentally would have impacted their profitability in a positive way. And I think how cool, you know, so many people say, well, we need it, the area so that we can have a bar so that we can sell a drink. Nope. People are just standing there in the queue having a beer. It's all a bit of a party. That's really quite cool, I think. That's a great little innovation that you can put in as a part of the processes that you've got. Another part of the entrepreneurial journey is your problem statement. And I think coming up with the right problem statement is a really powerful tool. Too many people will say, oh, wages are really high, but you know what? It affects everyone. Okay, that's fine. But is there anything that you can do about it? What have the guys at Sushi Train done? They're the ones who, they've got the people who are doing the food prep, and then they put it on the little train, and then the little train comes around, and then you grab the stuff off the little train. They've decreased their front of house costs, which means that, you know, maybe their wage costs are exactly the same, but maybe they've got more talented people in there. Maybe they provide them with more training. Maybe they're able to smash out more sushi per hour than other people. Interesting. An interesting little tweak on that process and the way that they've done that. We've already started to see people charging more exactly like an airline does. So if people want to dine in on a Friday and a Saturday night, then it's a little bit more expensive to be able to do that. Got to tell you, I see that coming to online ordering. With my crystal ball, which I would like to think in this matter is going to be pretty accurate, this is going to be a process innovation that could fundamentally change our profitability for online ordering. And the other thing I think is really important to remember about this is the creativity and innovation doesn't have to be world's best creativity and innovation. You might borrow an idea for someone else. You might be putting in what is average in the industry. You might be putting that into your restaurant. But let's face it, you know, it's probably going to be something like stock control. How many restaurants are there with really poor stock control? What if you put in a system for better stock control? That is a little bit of innovation. You're looking at your restaurant, you're looking at the processes that you've got in it. You know, we buy food, we prepare, we store it, we cook it up, we serve it. That process, that innovation, that could have a massive effect. And it might take a restaurant that's unprofitable and turning it into a profitable restaurant, a restaurant that is profitable and make it super profitable. Now, we've covered it pretty quickly. We're probably going to deep dive into a few of these areas in a little bit more time as we sort of flesh out our restaurant innovation and creativity model. I think it's really important. I think it's really important for every restaurant. And here is the shocking spin on this podcast. This is actually part of our 7-step process for menu engineering. Innovation and creativity are fundamental parts of your menu process. We'll talk about the dogs, we're going to talk about the plough horses, we're going to talk about the stars, and we're going to talk about the puzzles. You need to be putting pressure on all of those. Every dish needs to have its place. You need to know what that place is. Your team need to know what that place is. And the way that you put pressure on is by menu innovation and creativity. Can you increase the profitability of a dish? Can you decrease the amount of time that it takes? Can you come up with a new dish that is going to do a better job than some of your dogs or some of your puzzles? That is the challenge. We might put a few, you know, little graphics together around this, I think, to kind of make it a little bit, for those who are graphically inclined, a little bit easier to conceptualize, because it is a little bit of a difficult thing to think about. Keen to see how you're creative in the kitchen, and keen to see how you're innovating in the kitchen, and don't forget, out of the kitchen as well. Lots of things that you can do out of the kitchen around creativity and innovation that can fundamentally impact your bottom line, give you the restaurant that you always wanted. That's about it. If you're enjoying Secret Sauce, please share it on Facebook or hit us up on LinkedIn. I'd love to hear on LinkedIn, what is it that you're doing around innovation and creativity? Let us know. Keen to hear those stories. And yeah, that's it. You have a really busy week. Bye.
Want more customers for your restaurant, cafe, or takeout? Every month, our marketing tools and information are used by thousands of restaurant owners just like you to help them find more customers and turn them into repeat customers. All of our tools and information is designed specifically for restaurant owners. We know you don't have a lot of time to spend marketing or learning complicated procedures, so our tools are quick and easy to use. If you're looking to increase your revenue and profits or want to work less hours, check out marketingforrestaurants.com.